I'm Ninja Sister.
And I'm Pandalicious.
And this
is the Eshcast.
This is Electric Sisterhood, podcast episode number 422. They've made a game of Russian roulette and exchanged guns for cats. Alright, this is Electric Sisterhood, home of the best.
The fucking best.
Girl gaming, tech gadget, and anime podcast. I am Ninja Sister.
And I am Pandalicious.
Welcome to a brand new episode of our weekly podcast, Panda.
Hey, 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 hey.
How you doing?
I'm pretty good, considering that Snowmageddon has risen its ugly head yet again.
Yeah, that is a thing.
That thing that we, it's like Voldemort. You don't want to talk about it, but you kind of, you have to acknowledge that it exists.
Look, I just want to find the Horcrux so we can put an end to this.
Well, there's like 12, so like...
I found 11. There's one more, and I have a feeling it's buried under snow someplace, and that's why I can't find it.
It is hidden in ice snowbanks somewhere in western Massachusetts.
It's getting ridiculous. So, needless to say, we have been stuck in the snowpocalypse. We did not go to DICE this year. Maybe one year we'll go to DICE, because any excuse to be in Las Vegas is a good excuse as far as I'm concerned. And if you want to throw electronics and engineering and gaming into that, I need to be a part of it. But unfortunately not this year, between fights and prices and cancellations, no. But it's okay. We do have video game stuff to talk about this episode, as well as anime stuff to talk about this episode. There will be no talk of Glee in this episode.
I wasn't going to bring anything up.
So you can rest assured that this is a
safe... Leave me and my guilty pleasures alone.
Safe episode. No, everybody has to have guilty pleasures, and they can't always be about video games and anime. What?
My current pleasure, and I wouldn't say it's guilty, is that the True Detective show. I've started watching that. That is amazeballs.
You are like so. I'm so behind.
I am late to so many parties.
Like not even fashionably late though. Sis.
No,
like,
but it's my own version of being fashionably late. Yeah. Like, I wait until everyone's already gotten through all their hype, and I'm like, hey, guys, have you ever seen that show? Like, I totally just discovered it, and it's amazing. I'm doing my own type of Christopher Columbusing.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a panda discovery.
Yeah, it's not really so much a discovery as
it is a... It's a discovery to me.
As much as it's a... I've been stuck in the house for 3 days, and I've watched all of Game of Thrones twice. What else is there to watch? Well, hey! What's
no,
this?
No, I could not do that. I couldn't. Though we're getting, the next season's happening like in April, right? It starts then, I think?
Season? I thought it started in the summer.
I thought it was coming like April-ish, May-ish. Whatever, it's coming, right. And I can't
yeah.
wait.
Yeah, yeah. Game of Thrones.
Thrones?
But we're not talking about Game of Thrones or the Game of Thrones game in this podcast.
I haven't heard too many great things about the Telltale version.
Yeah, you know, look, I haven't touched it, so until I touch it, I don't have an opinion about it.
Can't say much about it.
Okay, like, I work really hard on not forming an opinion based off of other people's experiences until I put it in my own hands, because what's fun for one person is not necessarily fun for another person. So,
I mean, like, I can run around and collect flowers all day in Dragon Age Inquisition and be totally happy, whereas some person would be like, fuck this shit.
Exactly. So, I'm holding off my judgment till I actually get my hands on it. Telltale is not known for doing shitty jobs, so, you know, I can't believe that it's the worst thing on the planet.
Oh, I don't believe it's the worst thing on the planet. Yeah. I played Enchanted Arms. I know what suckiness looks like.
Oh, poor Enchanted Arms.
Oh my god, it pains me to this day that I even put that in my 360.
Yeah.
My poor 360 has seen horrors that no console should ever have to boot.
You know, but that's why it's, you know, earned its retirement.
It has used up its pass. It's ready to just relax in the pastures and just take a break.
You know.
It's ready.
Explore some things, maybe do a little traveling.
It's ready to retire and, like, sip wine in Italy.
Yeah, it's going to Tuscany.
Ooh, so it's doing Tuscany.
Good idea. Right? Yeah. I mean, that's where you go, okay?
It's like, fuck life, going to Tuscany.
When it's like, fuck this life, ready for the next chapter, you go to Tuscany, you have some wine, eat some really good food. You sit
near some creepy Italian trees.
You know, you watch amazing sunsets. Maybe you get a Vespa. I don't know. But these are all
options.
You
get on the back of a Vespa. You learn broken Italian so you can kind of look like you're trying, but not really.
Right. That's what you do.
That's exactly what you do.
And that's, you know, what's going down for your Xbox 360 right now, and I'm kind of jealous.
I know. It lives a much better life than I do.
Oh, our electronics in our next lives. But anyway, let's talk games. Let's talk anime. Let's all not right. talk about Tuscany, because I really wish that I was there right now doing the podcast. Right, so it'd be a completely different show. It'd be 3 hours long. There'd be a lot more wine.
All right, then let me start, because I've got some game news.
Ooh, to talk okay.
about. Or game I just want to talk about, because one, I'm super excited about it. I'm currently downloading it, because I'm going to own this game like you wouldn't believe. In terms of playing. So we all know that I'm a survival horror junkie. I love to play them.
Did Five Nights at Freddy 3, did you get an early build?
No. I was approached.
Because I'm not touching that with a 10-foot pole.
I was approached, but I said, it took me a bit to get through two. And I'm like,
Get through two.
One took a lot. Two, I struggled with. And, like, I'm totally, completely planning to watch one of my favorite Let's Players play through three. Because I think I'm done with enough jump scares until potentially
P3. I don't like jump scares. Yeah, I am not touching Silent Hills.
I know you're not. And I'm going to.
I don't even know that I'm going to watch you play. Like, typically, when it comes to survival horror, as you guys know, it's not my bag. I like thriller, but I don't like jump scare, and I don't like, you know, scare me just for the sake of scaring me games.
Right.
I do like intense thrillers, but they're different.
Silent Hills comes out, and Panda purchases it, and I'm talking about myself in the third person again, I'm sorry, but when I buy it, I will not put it into my console until, like, 6 a.m. on a Saturday morning, and that's only if the sun is burning bright.
All right, so what you just said is that I will never see you play this game, because I'm never going to be at your place at 6 o'clock in the morning.
I will only do it during the sunny hours. As soon as that sun begins to, like, go behind the horizon, I'm like, nope, time for something light and cheery, because I need to build up my happy meter if I'm going to get through this game. But we've already talked about Silent Hill up and down, and I don't want to talk about that right now. But Dying Light, on the other hand, I want to talk about. So, like I said, survival horror game, developed out of Techland, I think.
Wait, were you with us the E3 that it was announced and we saw it?
We saw it, yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
I always get confused what years you went to E3 with the team and which ones you didn't.
I didn't go last year, but I went the year before that.
Right. Because I'm like, and I have a Dying Light shirt. We went to that.
Yes. We went to that.
And I recall going, nope.
And I went, yeah. Because I was really excited about the day-night cycle feature that they were showing us. That, you know, you were scavenging during the day, your resources. You know, and obviously you're still fighting the undead during the day. But if you were venturing out during the night cycle, you were going to encounter the enemies a little more aware. They were going to be a little bit more tough during the night. So you really had to decide if you were really going to venture out after the sun went down, which I really kind of like. And you don't get that mechanic a lot in games. And even in the few games that you do get some type of difference, it's not nearly as much of a difference between the day and night.
I can't recall any game, a survival game, where that choice between one that you had a choice to scavenge during the day or during the night, and that...
No, they kind of made it so that you had to do both during both cycles, and it was really just more of a setting change, mm-hmm. and not necessarily like a buff or a but they've utilized the cycle very well. I mean, in Dragon Age 2, there were certain missions you could only do at night. So, like, they played around with the day and night thing. They haven't done that so much in Inquisition, which I was kind of hoping that they were going to, but they didn't. But it seems like Dying Light is doing a really good job with that cycle, which is what kind of captivated me in the first pass that we ever saw it. And I mean, it pays tribute to its title, so obviously, you know, that was the mechanic that they wanted you to get hooked on. So that was a great way of tying it in. But Warner Brothers published it. It is available for your PC, for the Linux, for PS4, and Xbox One. Sorry, Mac users, not for us. Maybe down the road. I highly doubt it.
Yeah, you're not missing anything. Don't worry about it.
You probably have a console. You probably have a current-gen console, so you can play it on that if you really want to play it. The other interesting thing about this game is that while survival is definitely something that they want you to hone into how you play your game, like in terms of stealth and scavenging and, you know, just trying to survive, they really try to open it up to let you know that while this is a survival game, there is still something else going on in the world that your character is concerned with, to the point where that character has to decide whether or not they're going to do A thing or B thing. And you really kind of can't do both. So it really has the player sitting in that circle of you have to make a choice now, what are you going to do? Which I actually really like. I like consequences in my games for characters, and I will agonize for hours over a choice. Granted, I always make two saves so that I can do one choice and see what happens, and then if I don't like it, do the other choice. But anyway, so let me talk a little bit about the story. So in the story, you are this man named Kyle Crane, and you are an operative that the GRE, the Global Relief Effort, has pretty much contracted for you to go into this city that has been completely quarantined because there's this deadly virus that is pretty much turning people into overly hyperactive zombie-type creatures. Somebody has broken into the GRE and has stolen some really important documents that this person, who I haven't disclosed who it is yet, is blackmailing the GRE with exposing the world to these documents. So your character, Kyle, has been assigned to go into this quarantine city, find this guy. You don't necessarily have to kill him, but I do believe you get the option to. But okay. Your primary objective is to get these files out of this man's hands so that he can no longer blackmail the GRE. At this point, the city is completely quarantined. There are survivors who are trying to, you know, live out in the city of Haran. And the government is pretty much like airdropping in supplies to certain areas that they know survivors and non-infected are residing. So your character pretty much gets airdropped into an area in a crate that people assume is supplies. And a bunch of bandits tend to get to this box, and you get, you know, set free from this box, and they're surprised that there's a person in it and, like, not food. So they're, like, ready to kill you because they're hungry, and they're looking for the stuff that they've been using to, like, live for, like, months. So they don't understand why you're there. They're planning to kill you, and somebody else comes in, a chick named Jade, rescues you and brings you to another group of survivors existing at the tower.
Okay.
And you explain that, yeah, I think the story is, because like I said, I'm downloading it now. I haven't actually played this. But the story is that your character did something on the bad side. So as a punishment, they sent him to live in the quarantine area. That's his cover for getting into the city. And Jade's like, it's fine. It's cool. We all have dark pasts. You know, we're all just trying to survive here because they're not bringing people out. They're just making them sit it out because they don't want anyone who could possibly be infected to come out of the quarantine area and infect the rest of the nation. So you are then taught how to parkour, because they're using a lot of those free running mechanics in these games, and I'm not against them in any way. But you are taught how to parkour, how to properly scavenge. You go out on a mission. You know, this is pretty much your tutorial on how you navigate the game. And the tutorial takes you through a day and takes you through a night cycle so that you can understand the severity of choosing what things you do during the day versus the things that you do at night. So while all this is going on, your character is kind of conflicted because he knows that his objective is not to survive or to help these people, but to find this guy get these files and get the fuck out of Dodge. And they seem to say that it plays up a lot of his mental, like, you know, he feels bad for these people and he doesn't understand why the government doesn't go and actually get them. And later on in the game, you actually find out that parts of the government are purposely not helping the people at the tower for whatever reason. Granted, like I said, I haven't played it, so I don't know what that reason is, but sure the fuck I'm going to and find out. The game kind of, in terms of some of the graphics, kind of reminds me a little bit of Left Behind. Just a little bit. Like The Last of Us.
Right. A little bit. Okay. Which is a gorgeous game.
Absolutely. I mean, but you're dealing with, you know, that apocalyptic, you're dealing with an entity, like a mutant thing, not necessarily zombies, even though they're using that as the, you know, the defining thing. They don't look like zombies to me, but they also don't look like the infected either. So, like, I think they're playing around with that scape of that entity, and I don't even know what I would properly use it as. I don't recognize any of the voice actors. So there's no Nolan North in this game as far as I know, which is fine. I'd like to hear some new voices anyway. But I am 100% happy with the direction that survival horror games are going. And this is a sentiment that I've had pretty much since, you know, forever. However, I do know that Dying Light also has a version for the VR, for the Oculus Rift, which everyone was pretty excited about until they actually put the Oculus Rift on and tried to play the game. And from the consensus of people, and I've read a couple of different reviews, so most of the issues that people are experiencing seem to be the same across the board. And while, like I said, I don't have an Oculus and I'm not going to play it that way, I did want to talk a little bit about that, because if you are one of the few who does have it and is getting this game for the Oculus Rift, you should be aware of what you're getting into when you jump into this game. So a lot of the issues are stemming from them not building it properly to scale for the Oculus Rift. So in the console version, you know, like, you have your certain area where text will pop up, you know, whether it's flavor text or, you know, tutorial, you know, guides, like, you want that stuff so you properly know how to, you know, navigate the screen. And in the Oculus Rift, it's getting blurred out on the sides, so people are not getting all of the prompts that they need. It seems, and, like, the scale is not right. Like, I guess the Oculus Rift is, like, 1080p, and, like, it's just, it's too blurry. You can't read it. It's making people really sick because of, you know, the fact that it's VR and you're moving around, and motion sickness seems to be hitting a lot of people, but only when they're strafing, like, from the left to right. Like, progression, like, walking normally seems to be very natural for this, and a lot of people were expecting that to be where the downfall was in movement, but it doesn't seem to be the case. And another person was talking about how the interface is just not, it's not built correctly for the Oculus Rift, and if they were going to make a VR version of this, it would take a little bit of both, a restructuring of the hardware and the software to actually kind of make this gel better than it actually is. One of the big positive chunks, however, is with the HUD. A lot of people, because it kind of just floats around at the top of the screen no matter where you look, so it's not like you have to, like, pause out of the screen to go to a different menu for it. It's always readily available, which people really like, because then they can just roam around and not feel constrained by, oh, if I jump out of this for a screen, I don't know what's going to happen to me when I'm not looking at what's going on. So I'm curious about trying it, but I know I get motion sickness just by watching a game, you know, at 60 frames per second, just generally. So, like, I know I will probably try it on the Oculus Rift, but I would probably not purchase it for that. But, I mean, if you put the money for it and you own one and you want to see a game at its best and its worst, then perhaps this might be the game that allows you to do that. But that is my little piece. I'll talk more about it once I start playing it, which will probably be next week's show. But yay zombies, yay Techland for jumping into a whole new realm with the cycles. I'm really, really excited for that aspect more than anything. And I hope the story is good. it looks interesting enough. I hope they don't drop the ball, because if the narrative is not good, then you know I'll have nothing more positive to say about it.
Sounds really good. I mean, I'm looking forward to the outcome of, like, you jumping in and playing it. I will not, so there won't be anything I can add other than told you so's here and there. But I think that, you know, it's a really interesting thing to see, you know, as we're now getting deeper and deeper into next-gen console games, that fright as well as action and gore are returning as well.
They're all kind of melding in. And I mean, like with that whole free-running aspect, like, I'm kind of hoping it reminds me of the parkouring stuff that I was doing in Mirror's Second Edge. Son.
Oh.
I didn't play Mirror's Edge.
What?
Nope. What? Nope, I didn't.
Oh, fix your life.
I don't like to say that too loud, but no, I didn't play Mirror's Edge. So, well, but
you're going to play the new one, right?
I plan on it, but I feel like I should probably play the first one before playing the second one.
You don't always have to.
But I mean, like, I liked the parkouring stuff that Deslin was doing in Second Son.
Yeah.
I mean, I also liked it in, you know, the parkouring stuff that you were doing in Assassin's Creed a little bit. And
the scaling of buildings made much more sense in the last outing of Creed.
So
going up and down, like, that makes so much more sense.
So I mean, I'm looking forward to seeing how this rerunning will be similar, if not completely different and unique than that. But I mean, I can't imagine how much more you can push the limitations of a game. Like, I don't know how.
I mean, the technology, what the boxes can do, like, we don't even know yet. But I'm just saying, like, overall, coming back to the game genre, because we were real hot and heavy on FPSs for a while, it's very interesting to me to see survival horror, you know, coming back, like Evil Within, Dying Light. Now you've got, you know, Silent Hills on the horizon.
Yeah,
you know that those guys are coming back nice and strong with really good dev cycles. But you also have some of the gore stuff coming back, and you have some of the thriller stuff coming back, and action stuff coming back. You know, we're on the heels of a new Mortal Kombat game, which is just grosser than
1888 is coming.
You know, you've got
soon.
The Order. You've got Bloodborne. You know, there's a lot of, you know, adult, visceral action coming back.
Yeah, I feel like we're not in, like, the air of a genre, like a genre outburst. I think we're getting, like, a melting pot of genre again, which
I think we're going back to the melting pot and not so focused on the things that can be esport. And I'm excited about that, because I think that that breeds a lot of creativity when we're in that space, as opposed to everybody just trying to add on RPG elements to their games because RPGs are hot right now, or everyone adding on a shooter level or shooter levels into their game because FPSs are hot right now.
Though, don't get me wrong, because, I mean, there's nothing wrong with a good FPS.
No.
Like, there was a game that I was watching a Let's Play of, which is available on Steam, called First Person Lover.
Yeah.
Where it's first person shooter, but your gun is like a pair of, like, neon lips, and you're just curing all the haters. Like, there's no blood, your bullets are kisses, like, literally. And you liberate the haters through more passionate love kisses, for lack of a better word.
I feel like I need to play this game.
You literally
know. Why am I just hearing about it now?
No, well, because I just watched the first bit of a Let's Play maybe a day ago, and it's on my Steam list to pick up. But you could play a chick or a dude. Granted, there's a few, like, graphic issues that seem to be going on with the man's crotch when he's, like, kneeling. Like, it's kind of a little awkward. But, like, these are overly, like, attractive men or women. And you are in very, very little clothes. You're just there to help the haters find love. And you literally are being attacked. And by attacked, I mean, like, haters come up to you. They're, like, a shade of purple. And, like, they, like, nudge you with their hater pushes, and you have to give them love taps so that they can come off you. And then you have to shoot them with your palm gun that is literally like a pair of, like, holographic lips until they're stunned, and then you have to liberate them with the purest expression of love, and then they become regular people again, and you get more guns, and you get the, but you're pretty much running around in, like, short shorts and, like, a tank top if you're a chick, or, like, you know, you could walk in, like, short man booty shorts and sneakers if you're a dude. Like, it's awkward, but not awkward enough, I feel. I mean, I'm down for it. Like, I think I'd probably have a better love hit ratio than a kill death ratio in this game, I think. I don't know who they're trying to pander to, but it's crazy enough to get my attention.
Well, you know, I think that, you know, the community responds to that. You know, when we have something that is that unique, fresh breath of air that is just so different than anything else that we played. I mean, look at, even though it wasn't a great game, what Onichanbara did when it popped up out of no place. And what was that game that you played that Suda51 did? Lollipop Chainsaw. Yeah, but you got to admit, that it,
I mean, it was highly stylized. It's comedic. Its comedy was on par.
And it cleared your palette.
And it was
what you have been playing.
I don't think that game was intended to be a palate cleanser because people thought there was more. There's gonna be more substance to that game than there actually was. And sadly, if you can beat a game under 6 hours, then there's
no. I'm not having this the under 6 hours conversation again because, again, a game does not have to be long in order to.
I'm not saying a game has to be long. But I can do.
You're about to say that if you can beat it under 6 hours,
for 5 hours, and feel productive. And we know this because I got that game on release. I got it at noon, and I finished it at 5. And I felt like because you went through 5 different staging areas, and then you just had a big old boss fight where you encountered all 5 of those bosses again in backwards order. It's kind of like what happened in Dragon Age 4. What happened in Devil May Cry 4 with the repeating of the bad guys. And I didn't think that that was necessary. They could have gone a completely different way. There was a lack of substance. Granted, the game was fun as all get out. Like, I enjoyed the interactions. I enjoyed the visual. I just wish there had been more of it because they were leading to more. And then it just kind of fell flat on its blonde face.
Okay, well, then make that argument. Don't start it with the, I did it in under 6 hours, so it wasn't really fulfilling. Because I don't think that that's fair. I think that there are plenty of games that can be fulfilling that are not necessarily deep as all get out, but are still a good and enjoyable experience.
Okay. So then the time, all right, I'll redact that statement.
I'm just saying, it's the slippery slope, like, because as...
Well, I can't say that because I played 130 hours in Dragon Age, and I still don't think I did it.
That's what I'm saying. So, like, time can't be the measure of a good game. It should not be the measure of a good game. Because if you're just really good at a particular type of game, you may blow through it faster. You know, look at speedruns. That doesn't mean that there's no substance there. It just means that people have gotten very, very efficient
people
at clearing the level.
People have gotten really great at critical pathing.
Okay, so, like, I really want the community to get away from time is the measurement of a good game, because what will happen, and what we're starting to see happen, is that developers will make games that are going to take 70 hours to clear, 100 hours to clear, and you're going to clear it and be like, meh.
True.
Okay, like, that's a bunch of industry people's beefs right now with Destiny. It's like, I'm not done with this game, I'm 100 hours in, I keep doing the same thing over and over again. Yeah, but you keep doing it. So something about it is fulfilling. It's either the multiplayer,
it's
you enjoy the grind.
That, like, they do, I think Bungie is pretty smart about, like, I mean, and I hate that we're doing this tangent, but since we're talking about it, let's talk about it. Because, like, I have not played Destiny in a week and a half right now.
Yep.
And, like, I'm planning to play tonight, but, like, it's not something that I was like, oh man, I have to, like, when I get home from work, I'm not rushing to do it. But then when I do go and I play, I've noticed that when I've had an absence and I come back, I seem to get a lot better drops than if I've been playing consistently for a week. So right. It seems like, I don't know if this is something that they've calculated for, or if there's this weird bunk in the system.
Or it's, like, just how your random number generator works.
Well, I mean, it seems like RNGesus likes me.
Yeah, RNGesus likes you.
But I mean, like, and I feel like RNGesus is like, you're not around enough, Panda. Like, I feel like tonight when I play, I'm just going to turn on, and there's going to be something in my mailbox that I did not earn. And it's going to be something that I'm going to want to use, and it's going to be pretty and purple, and that's going to be great. Or something's just going to drop for me that everyone's going to be like, oh my god! And, like, and that kind of is what happens. And it seems like people who do very little in the game get a lot more from the game. Yeah. So it's kind of like that chick, that hot chick, that, like, you know you want to, like, be around and whatever, but you act like you don't because it makes her progress and pursue you more. So it's like, no, Destiny, I will not play you this week.
Basically, oh, wait, it's playing hard to get.
It is. So it's like, oh, no, no, I want you. I want you. I'll do anything for you. Here's this thing. Oh, I don't know if that's enough. Here's all this other stuff. Okay. And, like, I feel like this game is doing that to a lot of people, which is why people will come back. Like, if they don't play all week, they'll at least come back on Friday to see what Xur's got. Or they'll hoard all their strange coins and wait to see what Xur has. Like, I'm holding on to mine for Icebreaker because I know that Mother is going to come back with it. And I'm going to get it because I didn't get it the last time.
Yep.
But, you know.
So. I just need Xur to have a Galahorn and everything will be fine.
Good luck with that one.
Yeah.
But that's what I feel like Destiny is doing. But, I mean, it is enough to make someone log in and go, you know what, I'll do the daily today, and I'll do the weekly today. Oh, yeah, I'll do the Nightfall today so I can get my XP bonus. And, oh, yeah, I'll go and roll a character because my vault goes between all three characters, so I can essentially use everything that I get in the game. Like, they've made enough loopholes to justify the crappiness, I think.
I think it comes down to what appeals to you, right? Like, Destiny is a solid shooter. It's not the best one on the planet. It's not the game to define shooters with.
No, but it's what people will play until Halo 5 Guardians comes out.
But it is solid as hell. And the multiplayer is solid as hell. You know, the ability to jump in and jump out with fire teams on missions, you know, with no seamed any kind of lag other than when the servers are being denial of service attacked, you know, is a nice thing because you can jump in, jump out. You know, there's a lot of value for people, especially those who work during the day, to not necessarily have to plan get-togethers days in advance to play, but to be able to jump onto a system, see that a friend is on, and be like, yo, you need any help, jump in, jump out as you need to, and there's no loss for you or the other people that you're playing with.
You know, sometimes I don't even like that. Like, no offense. Like, I mean, I don't mind when, like, you jump in my fire party because, like, you're my blood and I love you and I love playing. Of all games, I really do love playing Destiny with you. Like, I do have a really good time.
Aw, shucks.
I do. And I'm not just pulling your leg. But, like, I've gotten to a point now that I have to sometimes put on my invite only. Because, like, people that I've played with who I do enjoy playing with sometimes, I don't always want to because sometimes I'm taking something a little bit more seriously than, like, say my friend Flu.
Right.
For an instance. Like, sometimes he is just not, you know, very for it, and he just wants to dick around, and that's all well and good, but sorry, dude, I'm on a mission right now, and I kind of need, like, a core team who, like, wants to get it done.
I need a team right now who is down to do this Nightfall on, like, hard.
For real.
And, like, crunch through it. I need somebody who wants to get these 9 strange coins in one shot, not just 3.
Right, exactly. And that's, I've had to go and put invite only sometimes because, you know, while I know everyone's trying to have fun, like you said, sometimes what I find fun on, like, Tuesday is not what Flu finds fun on Tuesday.
Right.
And then, like, we're just dicking around because I want to get shit done, but that person doesn't. And, but yeah. I mean, I love the idea of being able to see my friend and see what they're doing and then decide whether or not we're going to party it up or not. But the free, just anyone can jump in once they're, it's a little too much. Sometimes you're pressing upon me in a way that I don't want to be pressed upon, you know? Like, sometimes I just want my alone Destiny time.
And if
I
want to be, huh? Sometimes you just want to be on a planet and grind.
Exactly. And then, like, someone jumps in your party and you're like, what are you doing? Oh, I'm just grinding Spirit Bloom right now. Oh, well, let's go do that. I'm like, I don't really want to, dude.
I'm just
If I wanted to do something with you, I would have joined your farty, your fire party.
Your like farty? I would have joined your farty
party. I would have joined your farty party like 8 minutes ago, but I didn't because clearly I have something I'm doing that I know you don't want to do for 3 hours.
Like, damn it!
I'm trying
just
to
let me
to
have
you.
My grind time. Ugh.
My quality destiny alone time. You are in crowd. You're crowding my space.
You're
fight somebody.
Literally my destiny space. You need to go to a distant
this infinite space. You're in my personal space. Get the fuck out. Bye. Bye, Felicia.
Bye, Felicia.
Yeah.
Anywho. See?
Tangent over.
Back to anime and games. I'm actually going to talk about an anime which I think I mentioned a few episodes ago as far as one of the ones that was streaming this season on Crunchyroll as well as Funimation and even on Hulu Plus.
Oh, man,
that was worth watching. Yeah, it was one of the ones that I was like, all right, so here are the new ones coming out, and these ones are definitely worth a watch, but I don't think I delved into it really deeply. So I'm actually going to talk about Alnoa Zero.
Okay.
Which is, like I said, it's on Crunchyroll right now, it's also on Hulu, and I believe it's on Funimation as well, but I know it's on Hulu and Crunchyroll for sure. I'm watching it on Crunchyroll because if I have the option to watch it without commercial interruption, I take it.
You know, I don't get annoyed by commercials.
I get annoyed by Hulu commercials because typically I binge watch Hulu when I watch it. So I end up seeing the same commercial for hours on end because I'm binge watching. So, you know, within a course of a 5-hour period, I've seen the same Harvard Health commercial where we can all do things together so many times.
I get the folk girl Geico commercials.
I get the Harvard Health ones. I get the Capital One with Sam Jackson ones a
ka-ching!
Lot. Yeah. And I get the ones for like Charity Water. And so basically I get like the more adultish ones because I'm in, yeah, that demographic now.
It's not bad.
Dude, I have not yet once gotten that Geico ad.
Really?
Yeah.
The ones I'm talking about? Like
yeah, the ones that you're talking about. I have not seen that in my Hulu.
I don't know why I'm getting Geico commercials, because I have insurance.
I know, but you're probably of the young age that commercial is targeting.
I mean, it is kind of catchy.
Exactly, but it's not catchy to me. Like, I find it fucking annoying. So they did their homework,
Rattlesnake
right?
Rattlesnake ate your phone.
I don't see him.
I think it's catchy.
So
today could be the day you save.
Yeah, no, it couldn't. Stop.
It could.
Stop. No.
Today could be the day you save.
No, today is not the day.
Thank you, Nationwide.
No, that's. I'm pretty sure that's Geico. Nationwide just wants
Nationwide
you to not kill
kills
your
kids.
Nationwide really wants you to be aware that you have children and stop being an asshole because they're dying.
Do not stop having accidents that involve the death of children because yep. Nationwide is watching.
Nationwide would just like you to know that kids are dying, and it's your fault, you dirty bastard.
You kill your kids? Find out 11. Thanks, Nationwide.
Yep. Oh, Nationwide. Like, seriously, those commercials, most of the commercials for the Super Bowl were such a bummer.
Well, I mean, like, I know that they're, once again, we're going into another tangent.
Tangent!
I know that
I'll know zero. I'm going to talk about it.
They were not pandering, but they wanted to bring to light, you know, the involvement of dads. Dads involved in family life.
And like also that. Not beating of people and domestic violence.
That's
I get
good.
That because the NFL, you know, has not had a really good track record with those two things this
That's
year.
True.
Okay.
But, hey, my wife, my girl, my baby mama is like giving birth during the Super Bowl. Where am I? Playing the game.
I'm playing the game.
It's like, I'll go check on her after
the
we
doctor
win. Oh, wait,
said
we lost?
That. Wait, the doctor said technically she was due in 2 weeks, but she could have gone into labor early, but...
Can you imagine if she had, and then he'd be like, guys, either I help you guys win, but, like, I can imagine what
as much shit as he
happened,
tossed, I bet you
like,
he wouldn't have let the game.
At a certain time in that game, where, like, the Seahawks were winning, if all of a sudden he's like, you know, oh, I just found out my boo was in labor, he's like, you guys got this, and, like, he left, and then they lost miserably, if they would have, like, turned on him and be like, yo, dude... Because you left, we lost the game. Good luck
and
being a dad.
He been like, but my child, though.
F you, man.
Like, Roger Goodell said I needed to be a good dad. I saw the commercials before they ran.
He told me I was going to kill my kid and he would never get married. so I had to be there.
I had to be there because I'm a dad.
I mean, but yeah, I completely agree. You know, a bunch of those commercials were a little too serious.
That's why it makes all the sense now. Okay? You've got to be a good dad. Don't kill your kids. Alcohol is fun, but still be responsible. And then Katy Perry came out as the More You Know.
Yep, she did ride that More You Know star.
The Illuminati at work.
Yep. Okay.
Tangents aside and done and all those good things, because I could go on and on and on about Destiny and action RPGs. And, oh, by the way, I still am, like, dying to play the new Tomb Raider game. I need that in my life.
10 hours of in-game therapy.
Seriously. Poor Lara. But back to what I was talking about. I'll know a zero. So this is one of the series that was in a list that I recommended, and I've started season 2, which is currently running on the streaming services, like I mentioned. What I love about this series is that, one, it's got mechas.
Oh, God, you and your mechas.
I like mechas. There's nothing to not like about robot battles. Tell me.
I understand.
Okay. Do you want me to bring up Gundam Wing? Do you want me to? Because I remember a certain someone who that was like crack to them.
I wasn't about the mecha battles. I was about the boys and all the fan fiction I wrote. During the dark period of my life.
Yeah. And by, which is called puberty. Anyway.
Let me pine over a man who, one, doesn't exist, and two, would never actually like me because I'm not powerful or could endure anything. Because, you know, that's how that works. Anyway, as you were saying.
So, it's got mechs, and they are very interesting in their design. The way that the story is set up is that you have two races that are actually the same race feuding with each other over control of Earth. So you have the Varus Empire, which are basically Martians, okay, and they are former humans that left Earth, deciding that they wanted to advance a little bit in a different way, and ended up being on Mars. And have built this amazing, amazing empire. They're extremely technologically advanced. They stayed in a very class system. So you have a ruling empire, plus you have counts and the like. And so everything is class-based. People who are of lower classes are looked down upon by the higher classes.
No shit.
And so on. But they've been off doing their own thing. And then you have the people who have stayed on Earth. And they, too, have made some technological advances, but not in the same speed or at the same pace as the Martians have. Difficulty being that the Martians have basically tapped all of their natural resources. So in order to continue expanding their empire, they need more natural resources. And so they covet the ones that were back on their original home planet, though they don't like to speak of Terra in positive ways other than wanting its resources. So they're pissed off at the Earthicans, as it would be, that are still on the Earth because they want the Earth and feel that they're entitled to it, and so battles ensue. There's been a truce between the Varusan Empire and Earth for quite some time, but it's a strange truce. And so the High Princess of Varus, Asylum, well, I say Asylum, but her name is spelled Asseylum.
Oh. So
that's Asylum to me, but
yeah, it kind of sounds
whatever.
Like that to me, too.
Is enamored with Earth and wants to build a positive relationship between the Varusan Empire and Earth. Well, some of the Varusans don't like that and concoct a plot to have her assassinated and make it look like the people of Earth did it so that they can
go on their guns blazing.
Exactly, and justify a war with Earth. And they do kill Asylum one exception. It was actually her stand-in. She was kind of sick and nervous, so she had her doppelganger go through this parade, and so they killed the doppelganger, not actually her. She's rescued by some people who are fighting on the Earth Defense Force, basically, and starts to learn more about Earth, its culture, its people, and just reaffirms that she really wants to
unify.
Exactly, and get rid of these hostilities. But it's believed by all versions, with the exception of two, that she's dead. Now, more intrigue goes through this. There's all different kinds of backstabbing, both on the Earth side as well as the Version side. The character animation is really spectacular.
Does it remind you of anything that you've seen before?
I'm trying to think, and right now, like, the detail, I would say, is probably on the level of, like, a Sister New Devil or a,
like, Trinity Seven? Kind of?
Yeah, yeah, so it is very detailed, the eyes are very detailed, the mechs are extremely detailed. In the mech battles, I would probably put it on the level of, not Gundam Wing, but the Gundam that came after that, that was 2.5D, so it was CGI plus hand-drawn animation. You can definitely tell that the mech fights are CG, but the character animations, when there's dialogue and story being moved along, it's still hand animation, which is a nice mix, especially when you're dealing with something that's set in space. It's not actually set in the future, because the start of its hostilities and things like that started in 1972, as far as the story takes place, and so the battle that's going on right now between the Version Empire and Earth is set in 2014.
Okay.
What kicks it to an even another level is, very much like Gundam, the pilots of the mechas are really the protagonists and antagonists of the story. So there is a character named Slane Troyard, who is actually a Earthling, who his father was, and it's still a little bit blurry, either doing research for the Version Empire because he was kidnapped or whatever, but Slane went on a mission to try and find him, but his capsule got shot down, and he landed on the Version planet. And he actually landed in a room that Princess Asylum was playing in. And he was dying. And Asylum took pity on him and basically gave him a kiss that allowed him to more easily breathe the atmosphere on the planet. And basically saved his life. And he was forever grateful and basically in love with her since that moment.
Of course.
And Slane has been through a lot. Because he was a Terran, a lot of various Version counts tortured him and beat him to try and get information out of him. Which was not really nice.
Right.
But he has stayed completely devoted to Asylum and whatever her dream is. But he will go about things in a very cold manner because it's been beaten into him that you can do that to make things happen. So while he doesn't really like to kill, he will. And with no
hesitation
emotion and no hesitation if it is in service of Asylum and ultimately her goals. So there's this very weird balance between him trying to be sweet and recover some of that boyish stuff, but also being this cold-blooded killer when needed as a balance to this boy who's in love with this girl. To be his foil is the guy on the Earth Defense side who basically is in love with Asylum, and his name is Kaisuke Inaho. Mm-hmm. And Inaho has been drafted into the military following in the steps of his sister, Inko, who has decided that she does not actually want him to be in the service anymore because he could get hurt.
Well, yes, that's what happens when you are in the military.
Because he's a mech pilot, which they call them cataphracts in
the Cataphranks.
Yeah, in this series, and you have basically the Cataphranks that are on the Earth Defense Force are very much like the backup troops for all of the Gundam mechs. They're real heavy and blocky. They're not as swift and things like that, where, you know, they're just all about bullets and brute force and things like that, where the Cataphranks of the Vershin Army are these slick, super science-y based ones. They have weird power shields that you have to think your way around in order to get even a bullet to hit. They're all round and various sexy shapes, and so it really is like class against class, and it's visual in, you know, how characters dress and the equipment that they have. And so there's this battle between Inaho and Slane, who are both amazing Cataphranc pilots in their own rights, and they're both in love with this girl.
This kind of reminds me a little bit of, like, Code Geass.
It does. It does have a little bit of Geass in it, with a little bit of Gundam in it. But the battles are very interesting. But really, the story of what's going on between various counts and people on Earth with their own backstories and, you know, even a little bit of death, so that, you know, not all characters that start out in season one actually make it to season two, and they're not throwaway characters, but they're not throwaway characters either. And typically that's what happens in series like this, is that you're introduced.
Games of Thrones in it, you mean?
Yeah.
Like, these are prominent characters in the story that you would think would play bigger roles later, but then apparently don't.
Well, there, for instance, you know, all of these cadets who are, in the process of ranking up in order to be military members, the attack happens from the Vershin Empire, and they're all immediately thrown into battle. And, you know, there are cadets that are very good close friends of Kaizuka that you're just like, all right, so this is going to be the pilot that is the cheeky one, and this is going to be the pilot, because, you know, they all work in formations, this is going to be the one that's going to be comic relief. Like, you start seeing that in some of them as they go through these battles. And then, around episode 3 or 4, a couple of them die.
Oh,
like, the death,
no.
Death. So, the series sets you up very, very early on to let you know that everybody that you see is not safe. If it is in service to the story of what's going on, will happen to good people, and we'll push that along. And I find that refreshing, because I do start getting leery, especially with series that have multiple seasons, and you start getting into 40 plus episodes of something, and the entire cast is still all together, even though they're battling.
A lot of stuff has happened where clearly, in a setting in reality, it would not have played out that way.
Right. Somebody would have been horribly maimed. Like, you're not all the best fighters to begin with. You're on a journey to become better fighters. Somebody is going to fuck up, and it's going to cost them in some kind of way.
That's right.
And if that doesn't happen, then that tells me that you're not really invested in letting these characters actually having a real journey. And
you're
that allows me to turn off.
Growth to happen. Or character development to happen, and you want them to be in their own safe bubble.
I think we've seen
happen in series like back in the day.
We've joked about it recently.
Now we're seeing, here we go for an anime tangent, Sailor Moon. You know, the 90s version that we got, there was so much editing done that as viewers, you didn't understand the severity of if they lost a battle, because they edited all that stuff out. But then if you went and you read the manga, you saw that so many things happened in different ways, and there are so many times that Serena and her Sailor Scouts would die. Like, they were dying, and they weren't showing that. So, like, it gave you that illusion of, you know, good guys survive everything. And that's clearly not the case. Now, granted, even in those events where they actually died, through the magical loophole of storytelling, there was a way for them to be reincarnated, so dying wasn't really like dying. But, you know, that whole self-sacrificing thing is like the best power ever, and it just allows you to permanently reset shit, which doesn't happen in reality. But I think they're trying to educate people who still want to enjoy anime and realize that, you know, they are too smart for that stuff now. Like, we are too smart as a viewing audience that they cannot consciously develop series that, if they're going to go in a serious route, that nothing horrible can happen to these protagonists, because that's where the depth comes from. That's where all that great stuff that people really love, like in books and stuff, comes from. It's from those things that you don't expect an author to do or a creator to do, but then the creator does in spite of their own reservations of doing that for the purpose of the story, the purpose of the narrative.
True. You know, and I mean, we've even joked about this recently with Dragon Ball.
Yep. It's like, oh, you know? Goku is dead. Oh, we got him back like 8 times. Okay. And then the dragon had to be like, no, guys, you could ask for anything else except for Goku coming back. He can't do it anymore. Shouldn't have done it the first time, but I let it go.
but we're done here. So I really like the pilot versus pilot, planet versus planet, the
love interest versus in it. Love interest. There's a bunch of layers of competition seeming to go on.
There really is. And then you have some other characters that, you know, have their own backstories, and you're wondering why they're pursuing things the way that they are. And it touches on those pieces as well. So it's really a very well done story, and the animation is gorgeous, and I'm really enjoying it. So when I mentioned it before as, like, a good one to watch, I wasn't joking. And the second season is just bringing it. Like, I don't want to give it away, but the way that the first season ends, you're just like, holy fuck, there needs to be another season, and it needs to start now, because I need to know.
Well, I'm glad, one, that it seems like that series is staying true to the story plot points that they went and developed or started to develop in the first season, because there are instances where you'll get a great first season of something, they'll tease about a second season at the last episode, like with Psycho Pass, which I know I've talked about constantly when I was first watching it, and they did a second season, and while I enjoyed the second season, it didn't tie into the first season at all, so all the questions they left open in the first season have still not been addressed or resolved as far as the viewing audience has scene, which it bothers me, because these were such good questions, and I wanted to see you get so invested that you want to see a resolution, whether or not it's the resolution that you want personally to happen, you want to see it come to a head, and they haven't done that, which makes me feel like they're going to do a third season of Psycho Pass, which once again I would not be against, but I would hate that they're going from like arc A to arc B back to arc A when they could have just, you know, done it all in a sequential order. But I know some seasons like to play with that, because they're playing to something much bigger if they get that far, which I have seen done. But I know it pulls me out of a series when you're giving me something, you know I want to know about it, and you still refuse to give it to me until you're ready to give it to me. That sounds so dirty. But you know what I mean.
It did. It sounds really dirty.
So I'm glad that the series that you're watching is not going to do that to you. I'm very happy for you.
It's a good one. You definitely got to check it out. It's got a lot of intrigue, a lot of action, and actually a pretty decent story. So, Alnoa Zero, check it out. Crunchyroll.com, Hulu.com. I'm pretty sure Funimation. Pretty sure. Alright, so, the only other thing that I have to wrap out this show is Kickstarter. Now, we don't often talk about Kickstarters, as I have mentioned in the past. If we do, it's because it's one that we really, really love, and we think that you guys are really, really going to love it, or independently, one of us really loves it, has backed it, and wants to share and spread the word to any of the people that will listen upon the planet. I've actually been off of Kickstarter for a while, because I was getting real happy kickstarting some things. that I really shouldn't have. Like, the last Kickstarter that I did was for Amplitude, because, Amplitude.
Yes, okay.
But there were a couple ones after that I literally found myself right at the step to, like, actually back the thing and went, wait a minute, do I really need a blah, 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 blah? And I was like, no. No, I don't. So let me stop. And it, unless it's something really unique or something that I would really enjoy doing with more than just myself, so it couldn't be just a piece that just benefited me, I was going to stay off of Kickstarter. But I found a new thing, thanks to the interweb and my social media feeds, that I was like, no, I need to back this.
What is it?
I need to back this right now.
What is it?
It's a card game called Exploding Kittens.
What? A card game?
Called Exploding... Physical? Yes. Called Exploding Kittens.
How many cats were hurt in the making of this card game?
No cats were harmed in the making of this card game.
Okay.
Now, the project, basically, the team behind it is Ilan Lee, who has been... the lead designer on The Beast, which is a promo thing for Spielberg's AI movie. And he co-founded 42 Entertainment.
Okay.
So, you know, the group that's responsible for I Love Bees?
Yes.
Yep. Matt Inman, who everybody else knows as The Oatmeal.
Oh, The Oatmeal! I love The Oatmeal guy!
And, there's somebody else. There's three guys. Can't remember all the guys' names. All right, anyway, so those guys got together.
You had me at the oatmeal.
Basically what happens with the game is, it is a kitty-powered version, and this is directly from the Kickstarter page, okay? A kitty-powered version of Russian roulette.
Oh, my God. Okay. Right?
So players take turns drawing cards until someone draws an exploding kitten and loses the game.
Okay.
So think of it as like Ultimate Uno, where draw four basically said explosion, and you exploded. And that meant you died.
Okay.
So the deck has cards that let you avoid being exploded by peeking at cards before you draw, forcing your opponent to draw multiple cards, or reshuffling the deck. So there are different cards that you can pick up and ways that you could defuse the kitten. So like if you pull, if you pull an exploding kitten card and all the kittens explode in different ways, and so all of the art that appears in the card is drawn by Matt Inman, so it's all oatmeal looking cards.
Okay. Right. Okay.
But if you pull an exploding kitten card, if you have any diffusing cards in your hand, you can play them to diffuse the cat, like using a laser or pointer to draw their attention away, or feeding them catnip to make them forget about the bomb that they have, the dynamite in their hands, and they don't turn it on. So you can diffuse a kitten. There are power-up cards that you can use that allow you to peek at the deck and then play again. So, like, you can see if an exploding kitten card is coming up. And if it is, then you can skip yourself by putting on cheetah pants, if you have that as a card, and forcing other players to then take your turn. So it's a super fun multiple-person card game, and it's for 2 to 4 players, and they have a bunch of stretch goals, and it's been like funded like crazy. It's already like the number 6 top grossing funded Kickstarter in Kickstarter history. It's right up there right now with like the Reading Rainbow one and the Veronica Mars movie one. When they set up the Kickstarter to run, they were looking to, in order to actually get it produced and out the door, to get 50 grand. It's currently sitting at 5.9 million.
Holy crap.
In funding. And they've created like all kinds of achievements that can be unlocked. And as achievements are unlocked, they keep upgrading the different perks that people have leveled. So like right now they're holding, and once they get to like 10,000 followers on Twitter or something like that, it opens up another layer of things where the box that holds the cards will be a tin. It'll be a hinged tin instead of like a cardboard thing. But all of the achievements that they've created are really super fun. Like there's one to get people to post 25 pics of a real taco cat. So they put out a challenge on their social channels, and they're like, okay, here's the hashtag, make taco cat folder photos and post them to us. And we need to get 25 good ones of actual taco cats before we'll unlock this. So, like, people can buy taco costumes for their cats or just sprinkle cheese and lettuce on top of their cat if they can get a photo. So they're having a lot of fun socially with this, but the game itself sounds like a lot of fun. Like, it is definitely, you know, like war, but on another level, if you think about it.
Yes, it is.
Which is a lot of fun. Like, it's one of the games that whenever we would go, like, to see something on the half shell, like the Pops or something, we always brought cards to ultimately end up playing poker, but up until then, we do family-friendly stuff like Mother May I and Rummy and War. So this just seems like super, super sarcastic, because of cats, war. And there's also a Not Safe for Work deck that was one of the perks, which has been unlocked through the stretch goal. So if you're not playing with the kids, you can use the Not So Safe deck.
Not Safe for Home.
Yeah, but there are all different kinds of power-ups, like weaponized back hair is one thing that you can use to try and dissuade a cat or attack other players with. And I, as soon as I read the description and watched the video of how the game was to be played, I was like, done deal. And the backing levels are very damn affordable, because the Super Ballo levels are already sold out, which got you signed decks from the team. Those are all sold out. So now you just have the option to either back this thing for $25 and get a deck and get the safe for the children deck, or back it at $35 and get the full Not Safe for Work deck and the Safe for Work deck. So, you know, it's pretty damn affordable.
That is pretty awesome. I think I might need to back this, even though it clearly doesn't need my backing.
But it does need your backing, because if it becomes the number one backed thing, there's like, I'm pretty sure that there's an achievement for that where they promise to do some shit. I don't even know. Yeah, once they get to 150,000 backers, which they're already at 144,000, so, you know, push that number higher, guys. Search Kickstarter for exploding kittens. Trust me, you will feel better about your life.
I know, so. I already do hearing
about it. Yeah, I'm looking forward to playing this game. You know, it would be the type of thing to play when you're snowed in the house with friends and family.
Hopefully you're snowed in with friends, so.
Yes. Although you could play it with your family, because there is the family-friendly deck.
Do you feel like this game is now going to come into, like, the playing party scene, like Cards Against Humanity?
I do. Okay. I would put it definitely in the Cards Against catalog, because it is so oatmeal in its humor, you know, that even if you're playing with, like, the kid card versions or the kid-friendly card versions, I mean, you still have, as a weapon, a fat cat in a bikini.
Sexy.
You have a taco cat, which the line on it was like, I'm a palindrome. And it took me a hot second to be like, yep, taco cat backwards is taco cat. Go ahead. I'll give you a second. Your mind's going to be blown.
Taco cat is taco cat. I can't wait. I'm so pumped.
So, I do think that it's definitely going to make the scene, because it is designed to be a fun game, but it is a high intense game, because you're always watching out for the exploding cat. It's not like there's one exploding cat. There are multiple exploding cats in a deck. You know, so making sure that you're always keeping some kind of attack card in your hand, some kind of divisive, defensive card in your hand so that you can defuse an exploding cat will be important. And then, you know, as you start losing players, you know, it increases everybody's likelihood of picking up an exploding cat. So it is like a very, very like nerve-wracking game, and it is, I can see a lot of people having a lot of fun but getting very competitive with it.
Oh yeah.
Just like Ka has done. you know, it was a fun thing, but now people are really getting super focused on, okay, I know this person's type of humor, so this and this card will get me probably the win, and this card will probably get me the win. Like, and people are starting to use some of the alternate rules to get really competitive. So I do see Exploding Cats kind of entering that echelon. Plus, it's done by the oatmeal, so come on.
You have me at oatmeal.
Exactly. Exactly. So I'm really looking forward to it, and I'm so glad that the project has gotten funded and way-funded and way-funded and way-funded. I can't wait to get my deck. And as soon as I do, I'll pop a picture up on our Facebook page and on our Twitter page so you can check it out. But that's what I got. Alnoa Zero and Exploding
Kittens. I wish you had talked about that first.
And
that would have been a great
kittens.
Way to start the show.
So, yeah, Exploding Kittens. Just picture life and back it.
Done deal. Done freaking deal.
So with that, it's now the time of the show where I remind you to check out all the stuff that we write about on our website, www.egmnow.com/electricsisterhood. News and reviews, you will always find them there. Any type of AAA coverage that we do of games, it's there. egmnow.com/electricsisterhood. Subscribe, and the moment we put out new articles, you will be notified. You can check them out, share them on your social, and all that good stuff. You can also check out our podcast like we do every week, except for the weeks that we don't, when we take a hiatus, because we do that. Everybody
because
needs vacation time.
Or
sometimes there's snowbegins. Sometimes it's vacation time. Sometimes I don't want to get out of my pajamas. It happens.
It does happen, people.
So when it does, you can check out a clip show, but you can check out any of the other shows in our archive through our website, www.electricsisterhood.com. You will always find our podcast episodes there, but you can find our podcast in a bunch of different places, starting with iTunes, either on the desktop or in the iOS application podcasts on your iOS device by searching for the Ashcast and subscribing. We are also on Stitcher Radio, so if you're not living La Vida I, you can catch our podcast over there every week. You can also get it on the VOG Network at vognetwork.com. New episodes air on Tuesday right before Anime Jam Session, so you can really get your super nerd otaku on between our show and their show and make it a great night. I highly recommend it. But search us out on the web. Trust us, you'll find our podcast. We can't be missed. We've been doing it for 8 years, guys. We're all over the tubes. We're not the only thing that make up the Land of Esh, though. So if you want some other great shows, which, trust me, you do, then make sure to check out No Borders, No Race on Tuesday, held down by our homeboy, KBD. If it's indie, if it's interesting, then it's on No Borders, No Race. Make sure that you check it out and subscribe. On Wednesdays, if you need beats for your feet, we've got Geek Aggro. New playlists all the time. EDM, trap, house, trance. Trust us, if it'll make you wiggle, then it's on Geek Aggro. And on Thursdays, if you've got issues,
he's got issues,
y'all can have issues together. The Issues Guy Issues Program, call in live. And just be part of the show. It is so random, but it is so much fun. Trust us, you want to be on the show. Be part of the YouTube stream. It's phenomenal. And for the rest of your nerd needs for the rest of the week, like I said, we're on social, so hit us up on Facebook, facebook.com/landofesh. New articles, stories, things that we're liking, things that we're talking about, always on our page there. We're also talking about that stuff on Twitter. You can follow us at ESH News. Stay in the know for all things that are going down that are cool. News, reviews, stuff that we're reading that we think is really cool. We're sharing it on the Twitters. And you should follow us to add that awesomeness to your feed. And speaking of awesomeness to add to your life or feed in general, if you're coming to PAX, because PAX East is around the corner.
I know.
Like, it is so close.
It's on like Donkey Kong.
It really is. You want to make sure, if you're coming to town, that you're part of probably what will go down as the most epic PAX East party ever.
Party people!
8-bit Boston!
People.
8-bit Boston 2, the 16-bit invasion, is going down on the 6th. And guess what? We're co-sponsoring this party, so trust
Friday
us.
Friday night party! Ba-bum, ba-bum, ba-bum. I can't do a sound.
It's okay. It's all right. We don't have a soundboard, but you did really well. You got really close. You want to make sure that you check it out. Tickets are on sale right now. We are going to be at Prime. We've got three floors. We've got amazing music. There will be raffles. Trust me.
Sweet loops for your glutes.
No, but nice try on the rhymes.
I tried.
Trust and believe, you guys, you want to be at this party. You want to buy raffle tickets. Not just because the benefits of the raffle go to Able Gamers, which is a phenomenal organization, but we've got, like, amazing stuff that's going to be raffled off. We've got, like, a one-of-a-kind, well, I shouldn't say one-of-a-kind, it's one of 100.
Some awesome tunes, drink some awesome drinks, and party with some awesome people.
We're going to have some premiere trailers that we're going to be showing that are, like, so cool.
And I mean, we're going to be there, obviously, so, like...
And then there's us, so you can hang out with us.
The party doesn't stop until S shows up, and we're already going to be there.
I mean, I rock the party that rocks the body, so...
And I just show up wherever she goes.
Make sure that you get your tickets. General admission's $23. VIP, which gets you into not only 8-Bit Boston 2, but also Sanchi's party, are on sale for $50. Go to eshne.ws/8bitboston2 and get your tickets, and we'll see you there.
And if as always, you're square.
Don't be a square. It's not hip to be a square. Don't believe the hype. Okay. So with that, I turn to my sister and I say, "Hey, yo, sis."
Yeah.
What shit are you digging this week?
Fucking hot cocoa.
Hot cocoa.
Because on a nice cold day, preparing for Snowmageddon, nothing hits the throat better than a nice cup of hot cocoa.
You're in love with the milk, cocoa.
Not even the water, not the punk-ass bitch hot cocoa, like the real hot cocoa.
Real hot cocoa requires that you melt cocoa in a pot very slowly on the stove and add milk. That's real hot cocoa.
Sweet, sweet hot chocolate love.
Okay, not the Swiss Miss dried astronaut packet.
Right. Yeah. Nah, the real shit. What about
you? Real deal. I gotta be honest with you. Right now, I'm just in love with still having power because I'm about to be snowed in and I still have power, so that allows me to watch entertainment and have a good time, and that makes me feel good. So, thank you, technology.
No, a man must have all that power.
I do. Because I'm not a man. I'm a woman.
Burn.
More importantly, I'm Ninja Sista.
And I'm Pandalicious.
Until next week, guys.
Peace!